This is Dirk from Maverick Rugby. Get low and get ready to rock, because you're about to listen to Casually Lit.
I'd say after last week's morning show, we're back at nighttime again, so we're going to be slow, dead, and worthless. What's up? This is Casually Lit. I'm Jason.
I'm Chris.
I'm Rody.
And today, Rody has brought us a guest.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
Sure. Name is Mick Lux. Some of you guys listening may have seen me on some of the DFW forums out there. That very weirdly spelled last name, L-U-Y-C-K-X.
Just like it sounds.
Exactly. But you just pronounce it Lux. I was born and raised in Belgium, moved to Dallas in 98, certified Cicerone, and just a regular beer dude who loves beer.
You must have gone insane for the first 10 years you were here.
When there was there was beer, but you had to go find it.
You had to go find it.
Yes.
The big treasure trove was Flying Saucer, right? Those kinds of places that started. It was hard to find in the beginning. That's for sure.
Now, when they get kegs from overseas, is all that pasteurized as well?
No.
Ooh.
No. It depends on the keg, obviously, and it depends on the beer, right? Your lagers, your pilsners, your Stella, stuff like that is pasteurized, but not your Abbey ales and things like that. They're not pasteurized, no. They're filtered, but they're not pasteurized. Hmm. So, yeah, you can age a keg of beer if you want it.
There you go. That's what David has a few down here in the New Main Brewing that he's aging. The Pedicolo's the Duke. And there's a couple of others.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
That ages gracefully. Very gracefully.
That might be why he's doing it. I don't know. So Belgium. That's crazy. What brought you over here?
So I came over originally. I'm an IT grad. So I came over for a job with Nokia. Who remembers that brand, right?
The brick.
And then the 3100s and all that. Everybody was carrying a Nokia. So anyway,
at one point.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that the people that protested the Forte? The Nokias.
Yeah, where's the drum roll? You guys need a drum roll.
Yeah, the sound bites are gone.
Yeah, a good buddy of mine is a drummer. I can bring him next
time.
There
we go.
Yeah, I'll bring him next time.
Just have a live drummer in the back.
So that's what brought me over, and I started, home brewing and all the other good stuff.
Out of necessity.
So out of pure necessity, the bare necessities. See, that's before your time.
That's Baloo.
There Baloo. You go.
I know Baloo.
Well, it was before our time, but we all watched it.
Well, yeah. Well, they remade the movie, and it's Christopher Walken that sings it, I think. I think he's Baloo. I don't remember.
He's the monkey.
Is he? No.
He's King Louie.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So who's the Baloo? Oh, it's Bill Murray, and it's a terrible rendition of that song.
It was pretty awful.
Yep.
Never saw it.
Don't
save yourself. Don't
missed it.
Yep,
missed it.
So, what were some of the beers that you brewed? Homebrew.
Well, I'm from Belgium, right? So, favorite beer to brew, drink year round, I would say is saisons. Got a Blue Bonnet bronze medal. To prove the one that I make is not all that shabby.
Nice.
And it works well. It's a great base beer to do all kinds of weird stuff with, right? Who remembers that Armadillo Ale Works did that Wintermelon, that watermelon beer? I should show you some pictures later. I took two watermelons, gutted them, put them through a blender, added them to that beer. Blueberries, pineapple, prickly pears. I mean, all kinds of weird stuff. It's just a great base beer. It's easy drinking. It's actually lower than what most saisons on the market are. It's only like between 5.5% to 6.5%. Kind of depending on what I do with it.
Didn't they market it as a Kolsch? The Wonder Beer?
The Wonder Melon. I believe it was their Saison.
Was it a Saison?
I thought it was their Saison with watermelon. Can't remember. It's been a while. I hope they bring it back. They should bring that back when they finally get going again.
So. They make some stellar beer.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they do. Yes,
Shout out.
So good.
Got some brunch money down
hey,
in the...
Hey, Giannis, Bobby, I'll be hitting you up. Shout out.
Did you say brunch money? You still going back to that, Rody?
Hell yeah. Every chance I get, going back to brunch money.
Yeah, it's phenomenal beer. It's
by the way, don't ever try and take down 64 ounces by yourself.
You stayed the night.
Yeah, terrible idea.
I can imagine.
Sure as hell doesn't taste like a 10% beer brunch money.
No,
can
not at all.
That all day.
Those are the dangerous ones, right? They go down so easy.
Exactly.
So I'm already trying to figure out. Brewed and bottled by Blackberry Farm Brewery. So this is the first beer we're drinking, Blackberry Farm. Mm-hmm. It's 1976, a farmhouse ale. It's definitely a farmhouse ale, although it's not as crazy. It's not as, oh, there's so many tastes in here. It's more.
No, it's very pleasant.
Yeah, but the weird. So I'm guessing Blackberry is just the name of the brewery because I was like, I'm not getting any berries in there.
It's the name of the brewery.
Yeah, Blackberry Farms is the name of the brewery. That's nice.
This Imperial Saison, so it's
probably around 8.5. What's it at?
That's not what we need, 8%.
No.
Well, that's how you kick off show. I guess it's better than triple barrel, whatever.
Yeah. 10 o'clock in the morning.
Baptist, yeah. That was a good idea. Good job, Chris.
It's 5 o'clock somewhere.
Right? Exactly. I really like this. It's very mild. It's not. I'm not a ginormous Saison drinker. I don't hate them, but I'm not like, oh, I need the next Saison. And this doesn't really come off as a super strong Saison to me, like, ooh.
Well, describe to me what do you think of when you drink a Saison?
Light sourness, not heavy. Light sours, a little bit refreshing. Kind of those kind of...
Sometimes melony, depending on what it is. Well, I get almost peach out of this.
Yeah, I get peach, a little bit of melon. I get some pineapple in the nose on that thing, too, interestingly enough.
Yeah, it is tropical.
Ooh. Yeah. I like it.
Little bit of funk, but not a lot. I like my Saisons to be a little funkier than this, to be honest. But it's good. It's a good beer. It's well made. Nothing wrong with it.
No. Really like it. Where'd you chase this down at?
Whenever they sent me to Little Rock, I found this at a liquor store out there, Centennial Liquor Store.
I see local listeners can't find it. Well, maybe you can.
No, you can't.
You sure?
Yeah, they don't distribute down here yet.
Okay, no. Take that. I wonder, where's the brewery based out of?
In Tennessee.
Dang, that's way far.
Mm-hmm. That's the cool part about just going 5 hours away is you'll get a lot of new breweries you've never seen before.
Yeah, just go across the border into Louisiana, like a little...
Oklahoma.
Oklahoma, Arkansas.
Yeah, distribution is definitely one of those very fascinating, crazy things that doesn't make sense.
Write your congressman or woman.
I can't remember the map that's going around on Facebook, but every state's blue. It's like you can buy a beer at the tap room. That's what it is. Every state's blue, and then Texas is bright red.
Yep, it's the only state left in the union where the holder of a brewery manufacturing license, not a brew pub, but a brewery license, think Lakewood, Piticola's community, ..
Martin House.
Martin has. So anything that's licensed as a brewery cannot sell beer to go. And Texas is the only state left in the union. Isn't that lovely?
We're stubborn.
Or stupid.
Both.
Yeah.
In some of the worst ways.
Yeah, just thinking about it makes you sick. It's like, you can't walk in here and buy your product from you. I got to go buy it from somebody else.
Right. I have to give it to a distributor and buy it from them. How's that work again?
That's the docking fee, yeah. That just passed last year?
Yes, and Turning Point had me confused, though, because brand new brewery that just opened last weekend. I saw that they were posting come pick up six packs. I was like, not sure if you can do that, but they sure as shit did.
They're a brew pub.
Okay, so you can.
Yeah, so as a brew pub, think Braindead. Hey there, Sam, shout out. But Braindead is a brew pub.
Ah.
They can sell their own beers to go on rotation. Close on White Rock Lake, same thing. So there's that idiotic difference in the state of Texas between brewery and brew pub. Chester King is a brew pub.
Oh.
So that's why they can sell beer to go.
So if you have to have the pizza far away from the beer at Chester King, I still haven't forgiven them for
that. Yeah, that was kind of weird. It's like, hey, let's go stand in line, this huge-ass line with our beer. And they're like, no, get out of line. You have beer. We have to keep the two separate.
It was so weird. That was almost 2 years ago now.
Yeah.
Somebody brought up Jester King to me recently, and they were like, I think it's such a fad. And I was like, maybe not. It's like,
after 5 years, he's still doing great. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't call that a fad.
Well, Rahr and Franconi are 10-year fads
exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
Well, he was just talking about what they do, just never having the same flavor in the same bottle and all that kind of stuff, and open fermentation and blah, 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 blah.
I mean, you see the lines that line up for all their beers whenever they have releases. I mean, you tell me that's a fad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Although I do feel like the whole climate on sours has kind of died down from where it was like 2 or 3 years ago.
No, the next thing is going to be hazy sours. All right.
Let's start that now.
Well, copyright. Collective's already doing it.
That's true.
Milkshake sour.
Yeah.
Or good milkshake one too. IPA.
Good one, too. I think there's something to be said for that. You know, first, it was all the barrel-aged beer, and you know, the stronger, the better, and the more barrel, the better, and all the other good stuff. And then it was, you know, big on sours. Now you got New England IPAs. Wouldn't call them fads, but you can see more and more things kind of coming in waves.
When we talked about it a little bit, when IPAs got really popular out here, mm-hmm. how it was all about IBUs. Mm-hmm. The bigger that number, the better. Screw perceived bitterness.
Exactly. Tongue scrapers.
Those numbers are deadly, too. At bartending now, sort of 3 or 4 times a week. I'm not sure. I was going to say 3 or 4 times. It's been a while. Bartending out there, I've noticed that people see those numbers and they think that really means that it's going to be bitter, though. And I'm like, oh. So I'm having to like pour them a sample. Oh, that's not that bad, but it said it was going to be 100 bitters. I was like, yeah, that shouldn't be up there.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned it. More and more people are going towards perceived bitterness. It's a way better measurement of how bitter a beer really is going to be, right? Because it's all about the balance.
Yeah.
And so I can throw 75 IBUs in a beer that has a very high gravity, especially if it has a lot of residual sweetness in it. You know, think higher ABV, whatever you want to mm-hmm. look at it. But compared to just putting, you know, 75 IBU in a beer of 3%. Yeah, you know, be a difference.
Yeah, people don't realize that. The relationship there.
Mm-hmm. No, you're right.
And I'm like having to explain to them that I promise you this dadgum IPA is not that bitter. And they're like, yeah. And then they try it and they go, okay, you're right. I'll take a pint.
That's right, you will.
Because especially for first-time beer drinkers, they're still alarmed by the words sour and bitter. When I'm trying to mm-hmm. change them, I'm like, don't touch that. Don't touch that.
Or hoppy.
Yeah.
I don't like anything hoppy.
Yeah.
Well, then you don't like beer.
I was like, they don't even know what that means. Yeah, they don't even know what that word means. This is hoppy. Yeah, it is.
that's the biggest thing in trying to explain to people is the difference between bitter and hoppy.
Yeah.
Right? Having hop aromas, hop flavors, which can be, like you said, spicy or fruity or banana like this one or whatever it is, but tropical flavors, all that good stuff, versus pure bitterness.
It's one of my favorite things to explain out there is that and Heffenweizen. I love explaining Heffenweizen because I'll let them try it, and then I'm like, what'd you get out of that? And they're like, oh. And I just say the word banana, and then they'll go, oh my gosh, it does taste like banana. And I'm like, yes. I just like watching their eyes light up when they understand what they're trying for the first time.
Banana and bubblegum and clove.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And he has a really good one down there, the Big Bend, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Oh, super banana. Very good.
Big Bend is like super banana. Yep. That's for sure.
Yeah, and I love that too, but it's fun. That's a fun thing to do out there. It's like playing with people's emotions. And I think Rody finally, your second time, you got the hang of it. Like, now you're just telling people what they want, and they're drinking it.
Whether they really want it or not, I just tell them it's good, and they're like, yeah, it is.
Yep.
Of course it is.
So much fun.
Yeah, that's why I like doing what I do, because at a private event, this guy walks up and they go, okay, are you a beer drinker? And the guy goes, of course I'm a beer drinker. I love beer. I said, awesome. What do you like? Oh, I'll drink Bud Light, Miller Light, yep. and Coors Light. I'm like, all right. I said, all right, and we had about 14 different beers, right? And I said, okay, let's start here with this, which was just a German Pilsner.
Oh, so it wasn't Dream Crusher?
No, I said, well, just, yeah, exactly. Here, try this. And we'll work our way up, right, until you say, oh, that's too much, and then we'll come back down. At the end of the night, the guy walks up to me and says, now what is this beer? And this is made in Dallas? Yeah. And I can buy this locally? This is awesome. This is my new favorite beer. That's why I do what I like to do, is just bring people out from that macro, you know, crap into, look, there is good beer being made around here. You really don't have to look all that far. Just go to Total Wine and start drinking.
Pick it by the label. When we started, that's what we did. We very first started 8 years ago or whatever. We were picking things by the label.
Oh, yeah.
We're like, that's a cool label. Buy it.
That's pretty much how we used to pick CDs. We're like, that album cover looks awesome. This music is going to be great. Sometimes it was. Sometimes it wasn't.
Yeah, that's how I picked vinyl. I ended up with quite a few draconian things on my shelves.
Yep. Hell yeah. That was the best way to do it. Now you just go to YouTube and be like, I don't want it. But people are doing that with Untappd too. I've seen two or three people do it. I'm like, don't pay attention to that. Pay attention to me. Try this. Okay, it's good. Yeah, Untappd. It's like, do you know how many people out there are trying this that, like, are, we make fun of reviews all the time because somebody will write on there, I hate sours, and they'll give a sour a one-star review.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of Red Gap Brewing out in Cisco.
I have not.
They just opened up just a few months ago, but they had a few Facebook reviews by mm-hmm. this point. There's one lady that gave him 1 star. Mm-hmm. So, of course, I had to look this up. And the lady is like, I don't like beer. I don't like the smell of it. They've done a nice thing with that place. It looks really nice. 1 star.
Just because she didn't like beer.
Didn't like beer. Never tried their beer, but gave them a 1-star review.
Gosh, I'm glad my wife's not on Untappd because she doesn't like beer.
Same with both of ours don't much care for it. They like this, they might like. They like some of the stays on some, and they like some hibiscus stuff, like Rosalie from Division. I don't know right, if you've
yeah,
had that.
Yeah, yeah.
They like some of that stuff, but anything that's not tropical or whatever, like, blech.
No, my wife's worse than that. If she can't pour it over pancakes, she won't drink it.
Oh.
Pretty much. It's got to be, like, super sweet for her to enjoy it.
Oh, so she'll do Imperial Stouts, though.
Actually, some of them she has. If they're really mellowed out, especially if they've aged a little bit and some of that hop bitterness has faded,
mm-hmm.
she definitely likes those. But think Lindemann's sweet cherry lambic stuff like that. Just super sweet stuff.
You and, let me look up his name. I forgot his name already. I apologize.
Uh-oh.
Andrew Schwab.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Made a chart.
Oh, that's right.
A beer aging chart. Do you want to kind of go into that?
Yeah, so I got to give Andrew Schwab, guy lives in Austin. And again, if anybody listening is on the Texas Let's Talk Craft Beer Forum, you know, most people are familiar with him. He's the guy, yeah. No, the Texas.
Oh, Texas. Yep.
Andrew's the guy who does all the research around all the brewery approvals, label approvals. The guy's phenomenal, and I got to give him the credit. He's the guy who really originally came up with the idea and just put this quick little dirty thing out there. And I looked at that and went, "Oh, this is really cool." So I took that, expanded it, cleaned it up, made it a PDF, nice and readable. Gave it back to Andrew. Said, "Hey, how about this?" And he went, "This is awesome." So. In the meantime, it's gone through a few iterations, but I think it's pretty final and it's floating out there in the interwebs. It was interesting when I asked you, how did you find me? And go, well, we had that aging chart. And I'm like, oh my goodness. So that stuff is apparently floating out there. People are using, which is a good thing that people are using it, but I'm just surprised that that's, you know, how you would find me. But
yeah, and I think it was like right before winter started. So it was pretty apropos of what we were about to get into. So I was like, yeah, that'd be a great thing to talk about. Do y'all have it anywhere that people can get it accessibly, or do they have to go searching for this?
There's a few different ways. If you can go to craftbeerchats.com, in one word, craftbeerchats.com. There's a link straight to it. There's also a few articles on that, which is my webpage and blog, and there's also a few articles out there about not only how do you age, just, you know, not more in depth than just a flow chart. How do you age? What do you got to be careful of? What are good beers to age? You know, examples. And then there's some articles out there around what actually happens to your beer when you start aging it. What are the flavors that are going to disappear? What are the things you're going to start noticing as beers, you know, start to develop?
So I did notice on this chart, there wasn't a section on here, on this flow chart that you had, that had a spot where you store the beer above your oven, and I'm just kind of wondering where that falls in line.
Well, if you never use your oven, ever. If you never ever use
what
it,
if you use
don't
your oven
cook,
a lot?
You know?
Use your oven a lot, and one time you forgot to turn it off.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
First 12 hours.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I wouldn't necessarily recommend. I mean, you could try. It might be an interesting experiment. Now you got me going. What people tend to think is, oh, I got to store it at 50 degrees. That's not really true. You want to keep it in a moderate temperature. You don't want to store it at 100 degrees. But what hurts a beer more in the long term is big temperature fluctuations. If you would put it in the fridge, out the fridge, in the fridge, out the fridge, in the fridge, out the fridge, right? Taking it from 36, 38 degrees, whatever your fridge is set at, back to the 75 degrees of your house. If you do that, try it. Take a beer, put it in your fridge for a week, put it out for 2 weeks, put it in for a week, put it out for 2 weeks. Do that for a whole year. See what happens to your beer. It sucks.
Sounds like a bad time.
That it's a good way to destroy a beer.
Oh, well, yeah.
And it can be similar with, depending on if you have bottles or cans, if you have them anywhere that's in sunlight.
Well, the sunlight is a whole different. I mean, you got temperature, you got sunlight, and then we can get into the whole, do I store them laying down? Do I store them up? All that good stuff.
I have this wine rack. That's the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm. Wine rack? Yeah. Let's talk about it. So, temperatures we just talked about. Let's talk about glass or cans, right? What really happens is that UV light interacts with the isohumulones of the hops, okay? Pretty much what it does ultimately is it creates a thiol, which is a chemical compound. Guess what? The lovely skunk odor, that's a thiol. It's in the same chemical family. Yeah. And that's what they say skunking a beer. Which is really, again, UV light interacting with compounds of the hop. Cans are obviously the best way to protect against light, right? They're completely opaque. And then you get into brown glass, blue glass, green glass, clear glass, right? We cover much more of this in detail in the off-flavor classes that I teach, but where skunking is one of the six basic off-flavors. They call it light struck is another term for it. And so you can perfectly age beer in cans. There's absolutely nothing wrong with it. I've done it. I have not aged a beer for 10 years in cans.
But no.
But you can do it. I've definitely had beers in cans for 2-3 years, and they were perfectly fine. Just like a dark bottle. My recommendation is always put it in a dark closet. Especially if you have an interior closet in your house or apartment, not one that faces an outside wall, because believe it or not, that closet gets more temperature fluctuations than a closet you have in the middle of your house. Just put it in a closet. Put it in there, close the door, forget about it.
Let it chill.
Yeah, just forget about it. That's, a good way to do it. Then you can, of course, start going into, temperature-controlled fridges and all that stuff.
Yeah. Getting expensive.
It sounds like you're getting above my budget there.
Well, I got two in my house, and $50. I tend to do it with upright freezers. Now I'm giving away my secret. So now DFW Craigslist, everybody's gonna be chasing down.
Buy them.
Upright freezers, more so than refrigerators. You get sometimes a little problem with that because they're not. You can get some condensation in it, but go to Home Depot, buy one of those cans, damper it, put that in the bottom. You're good. And then for $20, you buy an aquarium controller. And, again, if anybody needs that schematic on how to build a temperature controller for their upright freezer out of a $20 temperature controller, shoot me a note. I'll send you the schematics. I've built several of them. Nice. And that's ideal. Just a freezer, external temperature controller on it, put it to 42 degrees or 48 degrees, and you're golden. It's not that hard to do.
No, not at all.
$20. I mean, for $100, you have a really good aging chamber without any problems.
Well, you just got to talk your wife into getting another fridge.
Now I got four in my house just for beer. So I actually built a shed.
God
now.
Bless.
You have actually, a very lovely wife.
I will make her listen to this. So yes, I built a shed outside now for all my beer shtick. $100. The bigger problem is that once you start doing that, you run out of space in those fridges way too quick, and now you're back to the closet. So they fill up. That's the problem.
So you said you had four fridges.
Two of them are for home brewing, and two
okay.
Two of them
okay.
are for home brewing, and two of them.
I was about to ask how many cubic feet each one was.
The ones I use for fermentation chambers for home brewing are not that big. They're like under the counter wine coolers.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because I think they work great for the volume of beer that I tend to brew. and are underneath my workbench, you know, in my shop. So that makes it easy. The storage chamber is, oh, I'm 5'10", and it's taller than me, so it's probably like a 6-foot upright freezer. It works.
It works.
Sounds like I may have to buy jewelry along with that.
Yeah.
Right.
Just aging beer here. Here, have your jewelry. It's jewelry.
Jewelry.
Give me a jewelry. My change. All mine's just back in the back corner of my pantry, just sitting in there. I think there's only two left, though. No, there's more than that.
It's all Pumpkinator, isn't it?
Yeah. No, there's two bottles of Pumpkinator. There's a bottle of that space yeast that went to space. I can't think of it. Ground Control.
Oh, yeah.
There's a bottle of that back there. And there's that other Big Bad Baptist. There's two Big Bad Baptist things back there. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Mine are all not special, but they're aging and they're good. I don't have any. Besides the Ground Control, that one was kind of not really rare, but.
I haven't had that.
It is delicious.
So there you go.
And it's from space. I'm all about those gimmicks. It was so silly. The yeast went, the story was the yeast went to space. We don't know if that really happened, of course, but.
Oh, wow.
I heard the story, but I never.
Yeah, how do you fact check that, by the way? Oh, yeah, this definitely went to space. Wink, wink, wink.
Well, some beer had moon dust in it. Do you remember that?
Yep. Moon dust?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was I don't even remember what it was called.
So we could have some kind of bacteria that's never been seen on Earth before. Yeah, you're
probably going to die, Rudy.
Right.
Oh, maybe that's that new disease that they're talking about. Someone drank that moon dust. Perfect.
It was called Moondust IPA by Launchpad Brewery.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Never had it.
They really like DuckTales?
Yeah, DuckTales.
Wee.
This next one is something special.
Oh, yeah. Crooked Stave is just awesome.
This is very vibrant, very awake.
This is more on your tart side.
Yep. This also a saison.
It is.
Yeah, that's a barrel aged.
Mm-hmm. Mm. This one's also been aged in an oaked fooder.
Ah. Oh, it's a fooder.
Yep. It's not bad.
What the food do you know about that? Da-dunce.
And who makes it?
Crooked Stave.
Crooked Stave.
Denver, Colorado. Remember, if you're ever up there, that's a place.
The Petite Rosé that we had,
you go,
that you really loved because it was super, super sour and dry. That one, you still have the same company.
Nice.
So you will absolutely love this. So chug that a little bit. See what you think.
That's extremely sour. But
so you're not a sour guy?
No, I'm not a sour guy.
He's really not.
I'm getting there.
A beer guy.
Yeah, I'm getting there with sours, but yeah, it's still kind of.
He likes his malt beverages.
Yes, malt beverages and IPAs,
like Smirnoff Ice malt
beverage?
No,
yeah. Oh no, come on, Four Loko.
Maybe, I haven't yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
I may have some Tums in my backpack. Always, always prepared.
Not exactly.
So, Mike, you also are a certified Cicerone,
mm-hmm.
which is slightly better than a beer server.
Yeah, I understand. There's this guy named Rody.
Yeah, you've finally been outranked, Rody.
There's a guy named Rody who's a beer server.
Beer server. Certified.
I'm the highest certified person in this room normally.
Normally.
So it's a little unnerving having someone that knows more than me on the show.
Oh. And here's the thing. There's a lot of people out there who know a lot more than I do. So this is how I always open up any of the sessions that I do is if you ever come across a person that says they know everything there is to know about beer, walk away.
Yeah.
Absolutely walk away. It's a never-ending quest for knowledge. And understanding. It's just an awesome world. So yeah, I'm a certified, but don't hold that against me. I believe our nickname, at least from what I've seen in DFW, is Chicharone. So I like Chicharones, but
nice.
So that seems to be our nickname nowadays.
So how many certified Cicerones are in Texas right now?
Oh my goodness, it's gone up quite a bit lately.
Yeah,
I can get back to you. I really don't know the number. On top of my head.
And by quite a bit, you mean lower three digits.
In all of Texas, I would say it's around that number, 100-ish. I think last time I checked, like anything north of Austin, it was 40-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And I checked maybe 6 months to a year ago. I think I was number 17 or 19 or something in North Texas several years ago. But it's grown quite a bit. It's grown quite a bit. There's new ones coming every day, which is awesome.
When did you take your exam?
What year are we? 2018?
I think what year is it?
I think I took mine in the fall of 2014, I think.
Okay. So fairly recently. So,
yeah, fairly recently. I think, I mean, guys, there's guys around here in Dallas that have been Cicerones or certified Cicerones for a little longer time than I have. Sam Wynn, Jeff Freiman, Melissa. There's quite a few people that have been certified Cicerones for quite a bit longer than I have.
God bless Sam Wynn. He's, man, he gets some conversations going, doesn't he?
He does. He's an awesome guy with a great passion for beer. That whenever you read something that Sam writes, you always have to remember he's a great guy with a passion for beer and a passion for people. He is one of the nicest guys you will ever meet. He's really an awesome dude, but he's also very opinionated. So yeah, that shows. But you know, that's fine. I think you know we have a lot of other people out there on the interwebs that are very opinionated, and so leads to interesting discussions. You know,
yes,
dynamic.
Just leave it at that. Yes,
dynamic conversations.
How long did you have to study for it?
But probably less long than most. And I think we talked about it. I'm from Belgium originally, and I've been around beer pretty much my whole life. You got to remember, legal drinking age is 16 in Belgium, right? And the way I got into beer is there was this event one night, and I'm a 16-year-old kid, and oh, it's about beer. Yeah, let me go sit in. And the guy, the speaker was Pierre Celis, right, of Celis. Pierre Celis, as we call him here at Celis Brewery now. Mm. Pretty much the guy who, you know, started Hoegaarden. And yes, it's Hoegaarden, not Hoegaarden. It's not a Hoegaarden. It's
definitely been pronouncing that wrong forever.
Yeah, right. The garden of a hoe is something completely different, right? So it's Hoegaarden. Anyway, and so he was nice enough to answer all my stupid questions and kind of got me going on that interest in beer. And just like any college kid, I mean, I grew up next to the Stella Brewery, pretty much the Stella Artois Brewery. And just like any teenager and college kid, I was drinking gallons of that stuff. but one day we would take the time to get a good bottle, something different. And that was usually Friday nights after our Dungeons and Dragons. Like any geeky kid at that day. I've always been around beer, always had beer, always drank beer, always appreciated beer. Learned about beer, read about beer. I think the hardest part for me, at least personally, was not understanding beer or knowing history of beer or any of that. It's getting the style parameters memorized, right? The BJCP style parameters, because in Belgium we don't really give a rat's about style, right? If it's good, drink it. And then the tasting for off flavors. You kind of know what they are. But being able to have, you know, four beers in front of you, one of them is clean, the other three are not, pick out which one's the clean one and describe the off flavors in the other three.
Do you remember which beers I gave you?
When you take the exam, you sign paperwork that you're not going to share what's on the exam.
Gotcha. Okay.
But what is common knowledge, and I can share this, is you get three flights of beers. Four beers each. The first flight is the same beer. One of them is clean. Three of them are spiked with a chemical. And so you have to identify which is the clean one, which are the spiked ones, and what is it, right? Diacetyl, DMS, you know, all that good stuff. The second flight are four different beers, and then they ask you what beer style is this beer. And in the certified, they give you a multiple choice. In the advanced, they don't. And yes, I sat for my advanced and I didn't make it.
Oh.
That's okay. Uh-huh. Nobody made it. Well, the session I was in, nobody made it. There's three of us. I knew there was one advanced in the state of Texas, and I looked it up right before this. There's two more advanced.
Oh my gosh.
So there's three. There's now three advanced in the state of Texas. Michael Ferrari was the first one. Kudos to Michael. Shout out. So the second flight is beer style recognition. And then the third flight is a mix of the two. They'll give you four different beers. They may or may not be spiked. And you have to identify that beer that they give you. is it fit to serve or not? For example, they may give you a Flanders Red, which is a sour beer and yada, 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 yada. Well, that's a sour beer. So is that infected? Is that non-infected? Is that a... So you got to, first of all, you got to look at the beer and say, oh, I think this is this beer style. And then number two is it appropriate for that style or is it gone bad? So those are the three beer flights you get in the certified exam.
So you've been through the mm-hmm. Certified Cicerone program mm-hmm. and you've tasted thousands of beers. How do you fight palate fatigue?
That's a great question. I really invite you to get a BJCP judge in here, and I can point you to a couple of BJCP judges in the area here. I am not a BJCP judge, and we can talk about why not, but small samples, lots of water. When you judge, and I do some judging, but I'm not an official certified BJCP. I do some judging for amateur competitions and stuff like that under supervision of a BJCP judge. You get 2 ounce samples, you drink 2 ounce little samples of beer, and you drink a lot of water in between. They also, especially when you're judging, it's not like they're going to give you a Pils, a double imperial IPA, a Saison, and a barrel-aged stout in that order. Right, they're gonna kind of give you beers that kind of stay within the style, but yeah, it's difficult. Saltine crackers and lots of water.
Clean that palate.
Clean it. Your nose is another thing, and I teach this during the L-flavor class. Your nose is another thing. Your nose gets fatigued. Your sense of smell gets fatigued, and the way to do that, and like it or not, it's true. To neutralize your nose, all you got to do is literally smell your armpit, because your own body is it's funny, right? But your body is so accustomed to its own smell that when you smell, you know, the crook in your elbow or your armpit or whatever, you kind of neutralize all the other odors that you've been sniffing for the last hour.
That's insane.
Yeah, it is. It wow. is insane. First time I was told, I'm like, what?
So a lot of body sniffing going on.
A lot of body sniffing going on. Okay. Your own body, all right? Let's keep it that way. Yeah, there's a lot of that going on. And ultimately, even for guys that do this quite a bit, after a while, you're just done, right? You're just done.
So you're saying that Molly Shannon was a certified Cicerone?
Oh, God. Something I don't want to remember.
Now, does deodorant mess with that?
Sorry?
Does deodorant mess with that?
Yeah, they ask you during any exam, don't wear, you know, heavy cologne or deodorant or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yeah, it sure does. And by the way, even though I'm a certified Cicerone, when I come home from work, I get a glass, clean glass, rinse it out, go to my fridge, get a can or a bottle of something, and drink it. I am not judging and evaluating. Like, oh, look at this.
Yeah.
No, I just enjoy beer. I mean, drink a beer, for crying out loud. Even better, find some really good people to drink a beer with and sit with some good company to drink beer.
It's meant to be fun. It can't be a job all the time.
It is. It's never a job.
Chris.
But find good people. I was going to open up something sour, but he doesn't like sour. So I guess you're screwed, Chris.
Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, screw Chris. Bring out whatever you want.
Screw Chris. All right.
That's our motto, actually.
Take that, Chris.
So I don't know if you've seen this. This is a little off topic, but Andrew Schwab just posted that a brewery got their license, and it's Three Spikes Brewing. I don't know if you saw that or not.
I had heard about him a little bit. I just noticed it when Andrew posted it, yeah, that they got their license.
So evidently it's going to be a Christian-based brewery. Mm-hmm. He wasn't quite sure if it was going to be run by the church or not.
Could be. I have no idea.
Which would be an interesting conflict of interest, I would think.
Yeah.
My brew buddy is my pastor, so who cares?
But if it's run by the church.
If it's a charity, I don't see a reason why not. But who was that pastor here in Fort Worth? Wasn't there a pastor in Fort Worth who won like the American Homebrewers Association Award, and then Bishop kind of intervened and went, you got to go?
Oh, wow, they kicked him out for that?
Yeah, and I can't remember who it was. Like, he stopped homebrewing because of it.
I don't know if you caught that pop there.
I hope so. I should.
I had a hard time getting it out there.
Chris,
don't laugh.
Are you salivating right now?
Yes.
You should be.
It's a fancy bottle.
If you would.
You guys,
Because no. I can't pronounce most of these words on this. If you would talk about this beer.
Yeah, so this is Bon, B-O-O-N. It's a lambic brewer around Brussels. And lambics are a little, I mean, they're still very special. I don't know, when is this airing?
Usually Sundays.
Sundays, okay, maybe, you know, if you catch this on Sunday, I'm actually teaching a class about lambics and sour beers and all that at the Collective Brewing Project here on March 20th, so that's Tuesday night.
Nice.
And we'll dive in, that's what I do. But so we'll dive into this, but the lambic brewers are spontaneous fermentation around the area of Brussels. Most people will have heard names like Cantillon and Trefontaine and
Branch de Brussels.
Yeah. And then usually what they do is they age them in fooders. They let them age anywhere from, you know, 3 years and longer, and then they blend. And they blend the older beers, you know, the three-year-old lambic with two-year-old, one-year-old, and then the one-year-old, because it's not quite fermented out yet, that's what will create the carbonation. What Bone tends to do is when they have a really good batch or a single fooder that is really good, which they call a VAT, V-A-T, they will take just that and blend it with a little bit of young lambic just to create the carbonation, and they'll release it as a mono blend. So what you have here is a mono blend from VAT number 109 from the Bone Lambic Brewery in Lambic. Very tart, smells refreshing, good. Highly carbonated. Want to try it, Chris?
I'm trying to figure out what it smells like. It's almost like popcorn, almost leathery.
There's some leather.
I do get that leather.
Wet grass, wet hay, barnyard, funk, goat, blanket, all those kind of adjectives have been used to describe it. I get a little bit of tropical in here, too. Citrus.
Oh, wow.
That is actually pretty good.
That's super complex. There's a lot of stuff going on with that.
So when you say you don't like sour beers, these are the real well-made sour.
The real sours.
Those are the real well-made. And I hate that term sour. And I wrote on my blog somewhere a year ago or whatever on why I hate the term. But these are what you know, we now tend to call sours. These are the well-made sours,
yeah.
Right? In the United States, we're getting there. There's some really good sour beers being made in the United States, but most of them I still will find are verging more towards acetic vinegar instead of lactic, which is yogurt. What you'll find is these guys, especially when they age, they will mellow out more and go really towards a sour yogurt acidity, more so than a harsh biting acidity that you would associate with vinegar.
I really enjoy this. I definitely would put it heavier on tart than sour.
Exactly.
Is there something food-wise you would pair with this?
Oh, a million different things. Okay. But you can actually cook with it too, because it's so low in hop bitterness. When you cook with beer, and it's a very bitter beer, you're going to bring out that bitterness a lot more, right? Because of the fact that this has such a low bitterness, you can poach fish in it. You can make seafood in this. You can add it to a seafood soup. I mean, I think lambic and shellfish.
Which is funny, because the first thing I thought of was salmon. It would be really well with salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Some vegetables, roasted vegetables.
Lemon, oysters. Anybody here likes oysters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, this is good.
Missing out. Good oysters. You're missing out.
Tried it twice. Tried the raw. Almost threw up. And then my girlfriend's dad at the time was like, no, I'll fry one for you. Still bit into it. And it was that raw-ish kind of texture. Mm-hmm. Almost threw up again. I was like, I never want to try another oyster.
So it's just the texture that gets you?
Yeah, it's a texture thing.
It's almost like canned spinach. It's that same texture.
Oh, yeah.
It's that slimy kind of, just can't do it.
See, I can do oysters. I'm not sure I could do can't spinach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not my thing.
So anyway, and Bone is a really, is one of the bigger ones, lambic brewers, and they actually will deliver the unfermented lambic, just the base beer. They brew it, and then they'll deliver it to blenders, and the blenders will have barrels and fooders and all that, and they let it age and ferment in their warehouse if you want, or brewery, but they don't have a brew house. They buy the unfermented beer from Bonn especially, and then they'll age it, blend it, add fruit to it, fruit lambics, you know, cherry being a very, very common one. So that's a whole world on its own that I used to be able to get this beer without problem 10, 15 years ago. No problem. Now it's gotten so popular in the United States that the secondary market on this is...
Ouch.
...is disgusting.
I hate that, too. I hate when there's disgusting. A rare beer. Yeah, when a rare beer comes out and some people grab it all up just so they can secondary market it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Hey, I went to the Prairie Ale release.
Oh, you did? Yeah, cool.
No, I'm just saying, like... Oh. And then you see it the next day, like, hey, I have two bottles. What will you give me for it?
Yep. Yeah.
In search of...
Yeah, you talk to any of the old traditional lambic brewers, you know, Jean Van Roy and Armand de Belder and those guys, they're just disgusted. They'll sell their, you know, their beers for €7, €10, whatever, and within 24 hours they're on the secondary market for $120-150 or more.
Wow.
So it's supply demand. I get it. Free market. But it's a bit of a for people who have been around beer for such a long time who love beer, it's become a bit of a shame. But you know, it's what happens when stuff gets popular. You know, think sneakers. You know, someone we were talking about it.
Oh yeah, there's
it's the same thing with sneakers.
Sneakers, toys.
Exactly. It's not any different.
It's very strange. It's almost disappointing, but whatever. It's like, oh, I've been waiting for this. Like, I tried really hard to get Barrel Crusher at a couple places mm-hmm. and didn't get it. Luckily, he got it. But I was like, that's not even that rare of a beer. What the hell? People are just buying it out and selling it or trading it.
I can live with trading on occasion. I mean, it's like, hey, I have something that you're looking for. You have something that I've never had that I'm looking for, and it's kind of the same ballpark value. Sure, you know, let's trade. I don't have a problem with that. The better thing even is to say, oh, let's meet up and drink it together. I mean, that's the right way to do it, but that's not always possible. I get that, but
that's what Rody does for us. He brings us stuff from everywhere.
Good for you.
But no, this is excellent. I would partake in this more than on more than one occasion.
Yeah, and this one in particular is not that hard to get. I actually got this one at a local retailer. Nice. I saw it on the shelves and I got it. So wow. If I don't know if I can use a name or not, but if you want the name, I'll tell you afterwards, and I'll tell you where to go find it. You may still find it on shelves here and there. It's not cheap, but
Mike, the reason why you're here, let's talk about it. Craft Brew Chats.
Yeah. So, yes, thanks. I appreciate you having me. What do you want to know? Like, why? What do I do? So, what do I do is really classes, talk about beer like this, very informally. Off-flavor classes, I've done quite a few of those, beer and cheese evenings, you know, whatever, private events. I just did one 2 weeks ago for a guy who turned 50, and he said, hey, I want to do something around beer at my house. And by the way, all the beer needs to come from his favorite local brewery. So we did a whole evening around beers from that brewery, and I think we had 10 cheeses and some charcuterie and stuff like that. So anyway, what I like to do is teach people about beer, talk about beer. Like we were sitting here talking about lambics, right? What still strikes me is, and it's somewhat understandable because Dallas, relatively speaking, is still a young beer market. It has exploded tremendously, which is absolutely awesome. But there's still a lot of people out there who don't necessarily understand what all this stuff is, right? The number of times I get questions around,
but what's the difference between, you know, X and Y, an IPA and a brown ale, or I see this Hefeweizen versus wit, or what is this, you know, and an English IPA versus an American IPA, all that good stuff.
So that's the kind of stuff I love to do, be it in private or in public settings. I've done them at, you know, shout out, you know, Lone Star Taps and Caps. Yep. I've done them at Doing a couple at Collective now. We've done them here and there around town, and that's what I like to do. When the beer market exploded, you know, 5 years ago, people were, as a home brewer and all that, people were saying, oh, you got to open up a brewery. You got to go open up a brewery. And it's such a hard, sweaty, messy, back-breaking job that all these brewers just have mad respect for me. I mean, everybody that jumps ship and wants to try this and make a living off of this, I mean, hats off. I'm not doing it. My passion lies, my passion lies in education, teaching, talking about beer, helping people find beers they like, and just help the consumer be more informed so they can make better decisions or more informed decisions. That's really what Craft Beer Chats is all about. And it's chat. Let's chat about beer, just like we're doing tonight. Let's just talk about beer. Let's drink some beer and talk about it, guys. What are we drinking? What are we having? Where are we coming from? And so that's the gist of what I do.
Yeah, because it makes me sad. I'll talk to people that, oh, yeah, I tried a craft beer, and I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. And then you find out they had an IPA that was 8 months old. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, yeah, it was just terrible. It's like, mm-hmm. Well, there's probably a reason for that. Like, come over here. Let's try something new.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly. I mean, I was telling the story, right? The guy who's he's a drinker. And by the end of the night, he's walking out now a big fan of a local beer, right? A local brewery. I mean, that's what it's all about. And it's hard to do in the current climate of social media, where it's so easy for somebody to just go out and blast something and say, well, "This, it's infected. It's what, whatever." And then you go, "Okay, well, hold on, let's sit down and talk about that. What do you mean?" And then you try it and you say, "Well, it's not infected. You know, you may not like it or whatever." And but you see it a lot.
Yep.
And I'm not saying that there's not really well-educated people out here that are not certified Cicerones. You don't have to be a certified Cicerone to know what you're talking about. Heck, I wasn't a certified Cicerone until I said, man, let me sit down for this exam and see where it goes. There's a lot of people out here that know a lot about beer, that have been around beer for a long, long time. But as it explodes, there's also a lot of people out there still to this day who just are struggling, am I going to like that? Like you said, right? Oh, I had one craft beer and I didn't like it, so I'm going back to my Bud Light. Well, how do we pull these people into our market so that it matures and that, you know, we can also sit down, have a good craft beer and enjoy it? So that's kind of what I'm trying to do my very, very little part in. I love doing it. We'll see where it goes.
It's kind of the thing that we try to do.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of the thing that I try to do out there too when I'm behind the bar. That's mm-hmm. what I'm trying to do. That's David, the entire new main thing is kind of, he's wanting to build it on mm-hmm. beer school. That's kind of his whole goal. So I don't know if you've read or any of his stuff or paid attention to anything that he's done, but he wants to do like 4 main styles, maybe 5, and then he wants to each style have different variations of it so he can teach people how the different variations affect the flavor. And so you'll come in mm-hmm. and be like, oh, I want a flight of your – I don't think he's brewing a blonde, but I want a flight of your blonde. And it would have 4 different variations mm-hmm. that he could explain and talk about and educate.
That's
David's mantra is education, because there are so many people that are uneducated that are posting on the internet mm-hmm. about how bad something is when they don't even know what they're talking about.
I mean, you can see it on the occasional untapped rating, right?
So much fun.
I don't like this beer. You know, it's sour. Well, it's a sour beer.
Yeah, it's like I said, it's our favorite thing in the world to see what we'll screenshot and send to each other. We'll be like, look at this guy. Because we'll be like, I hate bitter things. This IPA is disgusting. 2-star or 1-star. It's like, well, an IPA is supposed to be bitter. You swat them. But no, it's fun. And that's awesome. Yeah, and I went through the Facebook a little bit, and I was like, hey, yeah, I like this guy. I like what he's doing here. I think I like the page. I
appreciate it.
I jumped on the page.
Appreciate it.
It's a good name, too. When you were saying it, I was like, oh, that's a good name for a podcast.
Sorry, guys. Craft Beer Chats.
Yeah. Wish we would have thought about that.
That's fine, yeah.
Yeah, there was quite a few other names we played with before we landed on this, because – that's the atmosphere. We just want to talk about beer. I mean, and then I said it earlier, you know, the guy who says he knows it all, walk away. And in any session I've given, every single session, I don't, without one exception, there's always been a question that I just, you know what? That is an awesome question. Let me go find out. Let me do the research. Shoot me an email and I'll respond to your email and let me do the research, because there's so much stuff out there. Yeah, I know quite a bit, but there's still so much out there. Yeah, I don't know everything. I just don't. And that's the fun thing. Let's talk about it. It's not like I'm going to stand behind this big lectern with 55 slides, right? It's here's beer one, here's where it comes from, and we usually stick within, like you said, the variation within a style. Wheat beers, you know, Belgian wheat, German Hefes, American wheat beers. What's the difference? You know, throw in a Berliner Weiss, right? And hey, what's this? This is completely different than that, you know, Belgian wheat beer you just had.
Right.
IPAs, English, American. Yeah. That's the kind of the themes we try to work around, because if not, it's just too much. Like I said, your palate fatigue and all the other good stuff.
Yeah, it's overload.
It is. It is overload. And the sessions are 2 hours and they fly. Just the interacting, which is always fun, right? And the people that come are the people that are interested, right? Which makes it always a tremendous amount of fun to do. So,
I mean, that's why we love doing the shows. I mean, it's literally an excuse for us to come drink beer, talk about beer, and just it's like our own poker night, except that's for... We don't lose money unless you count buying the beer. And we have a good time.
But that's what beer is all about. Good people, good beer, some good food, good times. That's what it's all about.
And that's definitely what attracted us to the whole craft beer movement was the people. They're mm-hmm. so generous with their time. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. We went to an event over at Luck. And they had Grant and Michael Petticolas over there. And Michael Petticolas sat and talked to us for 30 minutes.
Grant Wood.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay.
We went there the next Saturday to Petticolas. Remembered us.
Oh, yeah. Michael will remember anybody. And by the way, Grant, now that you mentioned name, Grant Wood's a certified.
Oh, really?
Grant's been a certified. Oh, my gosh. Grant, if you're listening to this, I don't even know how long you've been a certified, but he's a certified way before he came to Texas, I think. Way before he came, you know, brewing for Revolver. He's been a certified
Sam Adams?
For a while. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He was a certified when he was up there. So, he's a guy that I can just listen to. Sit down and listen to.
We interviewed him a long time ago.
Really?
A long time ago.
I gotta go find that podcast.
The video is on YouTube, actually. And we took video of it, and it was right when Revolver, they hadn't even hit their 1 year anniversary.
Oh,
we got
wow,
to go
yeah.
talk to him.
Yeah.
He told us a story about how Blood and Honey came to be and all that stuff. It was pretty cool. He's a really good guy.
He is a good guy.
Very busy. Now he's very busy. I mean, they can't keep up with production on Blood and Honey.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And some of the other beers now, you know, they now that they're seeing bigger distribution, it's just, you know, it's just harder for them to keep up with what they got. But
yep. They're a very interesting story.
Mm-hmm.
It was.
Well, this has been a blast.
Well, no, joy was all mine. Yeah. This was, pleasure was all mine.
And I don't know if you said, but let's tell everybody where they can find Craft Beer Chats or anything you want to promote. Go ahead and let's promote it.
Yeah, so website, right? Craft Beer Chats in one word, notthathard.com. There's a website. You can look there. Facebook, same thing. It's Craft Beer Chats on
okay.
Facebook, at Craft Beer Chats in one word. You can find me on Untappd for those that want to find me under Craft Beer Chats, you know, all as well. Warning, I don't check in on Untappd all that much. I'll just make mental notes on occasion. But, yeah, I'm on Untappd. I promised myself in 2018 I would get better at checking in.
it's a lot of work.
But no, the thing is this. I'm sitting, just like here, right? I'm sitting down. I'm talking to guys. We're having some beers. I'm old. Getting my phone out of my pocket to open that up and check it in. I'll just talk and drink beer. But I'm there. So those are usually the best things. And then you can send me a message via Facebook, via the page, or you can find my email address. If anybody has any questions, you know, about, hey, what is it going to take to do something?
Right.
All that good stuff. Quite a bit of private events. The only quote-unquote public event, even though it's a ticketed event, that is in the short term, is next March the 20th. Sorry. Yeah, which is next week. March the 20th at The Collective. We'll talk sours.
That's cool. They're coming on the show. I've got to reach back out to Michael.
Yeah, he was out here last Saturday.
Yep.
Super nice guy.
Uh-huh. I've known them since before they started. I met them at the Martin House Brewery Tour ages ago. Was it? Yeah, it was them. Yep, because they had a T-Rex. And I was like, you have a T-Rex. The name of the beer was T-Rex. And I walked up and was like, you have a T-Rex. And I tried to recreate the scene from Jurassic Park.
Was that River House Shootout or?
It was the brewery tour that Martin House does.
Oh, the brewery tour. Okay, not the brew day.
It was the very first one before Martin House's 1 year anniversary. They were only open 6 months, right. And they had the well. No, I have all the glasses. Shoot,
what's it been? 4 years now?
No, this is their fifth year.
Jesus.
So
time flies.
And we can also say that a good friend of mine, a good friend of Rhodey's, a good friend, well, Chris, good friends of the show pretty much, Jason Perez, has moved on from Martin House.
I didn't know that.
And he has started at Brutal Beer Works. I hope that said the name right. Dang it.
Yep.
I just found out. They're just starting to gather interest, right?
Yes.
But they'll be at Luckapalooza.
Yes, there'll be a Luckapalooza. I saw that.
Pouring, hopefully, next to us. Maybe I'll get lucky because I will be pouring David Stout that day.
Oh,
New
sweet.
Maine Brewing Stout. I'll be out there on a Sunday, my Sunday vest on, woo, pouring up some of David Stout because that's where the stout's going. I don't think he's taking any of the porter, but yeah, Luckapalooza in Dallas.
Sweet, man. Yeah. Might see you guys there.
Oh, heck yeah. That'd be awesome. You can come try David's beer and we'll get to hang out. I can't wait to try Perez's beers. I've been waiting for a long time for him to, no offense to Martin House, but to let Perez do his thing.
Do his thing. Yes. Do his own thing. Yeah, yes. It'd be interesting to see what he comes up with.
Oh, I'm pumped. Pumped. That man does some good stuff. I've been fortunate enough to have a couple of his smaller batch homebrew stuff, but yeah, we'll see. And I'm proud of him. And I know he listens occasionally. Congratulations, Jason.
Oh, there you go. Good job.
Love you, man. But thank you so much for coming out.
Yes, absolutely.
No, thank you for having me. Appreciate it. It was fun.
It's been a good show. Anybody got anything to add? Do we want to talk about our favorite podcasts? What's your favorite podcasts, Chris?
Controllers and Keyboards.
Hell yeah.
And Whiskey Boy Radio.
Yeah, don't forget to check out our friends, Whiskey Boy Radio, Controllers and Keyboards.
Jeffrey Lord,
yes, sir.
Funky Town.
JJTM. Yeah, they had another great guest this week. Check them out, Jerry Jonestown Massacre. They did. It's all about music, Rhodey. You got to love the local scene to love that show. That's what it is, which we need to get those guys. They do live podcasts. I need to reach out to them. And then we're going to bring Raise a Glass in here, too. They don't know it yet, but got to reach out to those guys. Woo! So,
and good brew guide.
Good brew guide, yeah. I'll be on the, I don't know their release schedule, but I'm going to be on their future episode, one of them coming up. So complaining about hazy IPAs.
Michael's might be.
Sitting here telling me what's happening.
It might be this upcoming Monday.
Probably is. I'm probably not ready for that. But anyways, thank you guys. Have a great night or morning, whatever it is. Love you guys.
Thank you for listening to Casually Lit. This is Dirk from Mavericks Rugby. How about you go check us out on Facebook and give us a little like.